Good morning. That last line is why I wanted that scripture reading. All who listen to me, all who listen to wisdom, will live in peace. And we are here in this series gathering what I hope is wisdom so that we can live in peace. We are continuing on in our series on anxiety. And before we get to that, I just want to mention that right after this service is a newcomer's reception. And for all those of you who maybe you're hearing about this for the first time, well, guess what? After the service, and it's only for like 10 or 15 minutes, it's real short, but right after the service, you get a chance to meet the staff. And we tell us a little bit about you, we get to hear a little bit from you and get to find out about you. And this is just a way for us to connect. And so if you have never been to a newcomer's reception, I encourage you to come and just check it out. It won't take much of your time. Tomorrow night is our monthly prayer gathering at 7 o'clock, and we will be praying about grace. This month's theme, as John has pointed out, is about growing in grace. And our world needs grace, undeserved kindness. Undeserved kindness. Just watching the last song talked about tasting God's grace. Come and taste God's grace. We all need to taste God's grace. How desperate we are for it. And how desperate the people around us are for God's grace. And if we are going to be a church that has any impact on this city, we are going to have to be people who can receive grace from God and can distribute grace on God's behalf. And that's what we're praying about. This is a supernatural thing. Giving grace does not come naturally. And receiving grace does not come naturally. So I would encourage you at 7 o'clock tomorrow to come and pray. Because Alpha's here now, they will be taking over the auditorium, but we will be praying in these back rooms that our church would be a church that delves deeply into the distribution and acceptance of grace. I hope that sounds worth it to you. And if you can't come for whatever reason, pray at home. Please, pray with us. Okay. Lord, as we delve into this message, I truly believe that you can change our lives. And I truly believe your Spirit is here. And your Spirit has already been moving amongst us. Lord, may our hearts not be hard towards you. May we be open and accepting to what you have for us, that we would leave here with a different plan in how to face this week than we did last week. All for your glory and all by your power. In Jesus' name, amen. When it came to my childhood, I think I've mentioned before, I had a very clear plan. I was going to be a school teacher. That was my plan ever since I can remember, since I was yay high. I loved school. I know, I was one of those weirdos. I loved being in school. I loved learning. I loved, you know, the whole idea of being a teacher and being in that atmosphere. And I know some of you are losing your breakfast right now. I'm sorry. That's just part of how much of a weirdo I am. But I loved the whole idea of teaching. So when it came to, you know, figuring out what you're going to be when you grow up, I already knew. I didn't have to take inventories and figure out what my career path was or what my personality was. I didn't care. I was going to be a teacher. It was pretty clear to me. And so all through high school, I had my plan. I signed up for university, started in university, and guess what? Bachelor of Education, of course, because that's what you need to be a teacher. And then God interrupted my plan. And long story short, here I am. The point of that was to, for me, the lesson learned was, my plans are not written in stone. They're more like kind of written in ice. They're good under certain conditions, but they can quickly go away. So, and you know, we humans, we tend to like to make plans, don't we? We like to think ahead. We like to project, this is where things are going to go. And some of us are downright obsessed with this. And so if you go to any wellness conference, you can have your fortune told, you can have your tea leaves read, your palm read, and if you're too cheap to actually pay for your future, you can just read your horoscope online for free. And why are we so obsessed with our future? Why is all this stuff available? Have you ever thought about that? I think it's because it's a way for us to try to control what we really can't control. To try to control our future. Remember, we defined anxiety as fear projected to the future. So if you can try to shape and control your future, maybe that could cut back on some of the anxiety we have. But, you know, all of these services that are offered, they really are pretty unsuccessful in squelching our anxiety, because we know, as humans, we know deep down inside, fortune tellers can't do their job. Because if they did, you wouldn't find them at a local fair in Nanaimo. They'd be living in some mansion somewhere, because they'd be making a bet on every sports event ever and earning big, big dollars. They wouldn't be here to read your palm. So, you know, we kind of know this. And that's partly why the Bible writers gave very little credibility to dealing with anxiety through planning ahead and through fortune telling and all that sort of thing. And I'm about to get into some principles about the future that the Bible tells us. And but before we get to that, I want to start with a back in my day story. Back in my day. Back in my day, and actually sometimes I think it's still the case, when it came to setting a clock, a digital clock, there was only one way to do it. You had to hold down a button, and at first the minutes would start to tick by, right? And then they'd speed up. And then the hours would start to tick by, and then they'd start to speed up until you go over the time that it actually is, and you have to do it all over again. Endless fun. Endless fun. And if you've ever experienced that, you know how annoying that really is. But this is a good example of what you and I do in our minds quite often. We think about what's coming up in this hour. Some of you are already thinking about lunch. Some of you are thinking about this evening. And then you keep fast-forwarding, and the days start flipping by, and what's going on later this week? What's going on this month? What are we planning on this year? Where am I going with my life? And before we know it, we're just a twisted-up wreck of anxiety. Because we have a tendency in our mind to go to the future. We fast-forward to the future. Some of us are really skilled at time travel. We are. Do you time travel in your mind? Some of you are looking at me blankly like you have no idea what I'm talking about. Do you fast forward the clock in your brain? If you do, probably you are experiencing some kind of anxiety, because the further you go ahead, the less control of that you have. This can be very scary. We are living in today, but quite often our minds are in tomorrow and next week and maybe next year. So if you remember anything from today, it is this. Don't go back to the future. Oh, that was worth a way bigger laugh than that. Don't go back to the future. Our minds tend to race at 88 miles an hour. And it's easy to get into the future and become anxious. But I want to get into some future principles first, because God has some things to say about the future that we need to know that will give us some context for what we're going to look at that Jesus said about going back to the future. So future principle number one is this. God's plan is supreme. God's plan is supreme. Check out Proverbs 19 says this. You and me, we can make many plans, but the Lord's purpose will prevail. I learned that in my career planning. I had plans, but the Lord's purpose prevailed. See, God thinks in terms of big picture. Big picture. We tend to think very small picture. Our life, the lives of the people around us, our lifetime at best. God sees eternity. He sees everyone. And his plan is to have a relationship for eternity with as many people as possible. That is his plan. That is his purpose. So when you find that your plans get interrupted, it could very well be that it's somehow interfering with God's big picture plan for you and the people around you. Because he wants as many people to know him in eternity and be part of the kingdom as possible. That's the big picture. Okay? You with me so far?
Amen.
All right. Often people will say, everything happens for a reason. Anyone heard that? Some of us have even probably quoted that. Do you know what that reason is? The reason is God's big purpose. Quite often. You know, not always, but quite often. That's the reason. God will change things for his purpose. And God has the ability to interrupt my plans for the big picture. Okay? Got to know that as we talk about the future. Next thing, future principle number two, God's ownership is assured. The writers of the Bible are very frank about ownership. This is a very unpopular notion. You might not like it at first. I'm hoping you'll like it by the end. The idea that God owns us, we are his. In other words, humans do not have the rights to their own future. You do not have the right to your future. It belongs to God. This is what we read in Jeremiah, the prophet Jeremiah. It says, I know, Lord, that our lives are not. They are not our own. We are not able to plan our own course. Some of us should just stop right there. We are not able to plan our own course. So correct me, Lord, but please be gentle. Yes. I think the idea of God owning us makes us bristle because the first thing we think of is slavery, right? We think we are God's slaves, and that's another topic that I might touch on here in a moment. But ownership, listen carefully, ownership is also the language of intimacy. It is the language of intimacy. Marriage in itself is a, I am now yours, and you are now mine. That is marriage. All of me for all of you. Paul wrote in the New Testament something that was 2,000 years ahead of his time. He wrote one of the most radically feminist things I have ever read in ancient literature. He had the audacity to say that a husband's body belongs to his wife. Do you know that? The husband's body belongs to the wife. The wife's body belongs to the husband. Crazy feminist stuff going on there. But notice the ownership. They each own each other. That is intimacy. That is beauty. It's wonderful. And you think, well, now if you were a real critic, you'd be going, now wait a second, that's just religious talk. I'm not even sure there is a God. I know, I'm definitely not buying this whole ownership stuff. Okay. Ever been a kid on Valentine's Day? Gotten a Valentine that says, be mine? Ownership is the language of intimacy. It is. And God's ownership is secured or assured. And we might think, well, wait a second. That sounds pretty one way to me. God owns us. Ah, but hold on a second. Jesus gave himself to us long before we ever gave ourselves to him. He gave himself to us on the cross. He became our servant before we became his. So this ownership goes two ways. In the book of Revelation, it's beautiful. At the end of the Bible, it talks about God being our God and we being his people. Ownership. It's the language of intimacy. It is kingdom language, ownership. So when it comes to our future, we have to keep in mind that God owns our future. He owns us. Which is why we can't hold on too tightly to our plans. Which brings us to this point. Number three, be cautious about tomorrow. Apparently the idea of setting out your plans and holding on to them tightly is not a 21st century phenomenon. This was found in the first century. And Jesus' half-brother James writes these words to the church. He says, "Look here, you who say, today or tomorrow, we are going to a certain town and will stay there for a year. We will do business there and make a profit." And then he asked this great question. How do you know what your life will be like tomorrow? Tomorrow! He's not even saying like next year. It's like you don't even know what's going on in 24 hours. And he concludes with this. He says, "Your life is like the morning fog. It's here a little while, then it's gone." What you ought to say is, if the Lord wants us to, because he owns us, if the Lord wants us to, we will live and do this or that. Otherwise, you are boasting about your own plans, and all such boasting is evil. Why is it evil? Because when we say, this is my plan, this is what's going to happen, we put ourselves in the place of God, and we push him aside and say, you have nothing to do with my future. I'm totally in charge. It's pretty delusional, actually, when you think about it. Well, the question is, how powerful do you think you are? You can't even guarantee your next breath. And here we are making plans for next year and all these things. Here are some things. By the way, when it comes time to plan, here's some things that you and I will often plan. Our retirement, our career, family. Family's a great one. I had a great plan. My wife and I were going to have two girls. We have three boys. Marriage, we're going to plan out, you know, oh, we've planned out that we're going to be married, you know, for the rest of our lives. You can't control that. You can't control that. Your health, definitely. Some of us, as we get older, we realize we have no, we can't control that at all. I'm going to travel here. I'm going to save this. I'm going to get that degree. How many of these things can you control? Zero. Zero. We have no control over any of these things. So you might say, okay, Pastor, so why bother planning? We just like shooting from the hip for the rest of our life. Like, what's going on here? No, it's good to plan. The important thing to realize, though, is to hold those plans loosely. Because God has the ability and the right to change our future. Now, again, you might be a real cynic. And if you are, God bless you. I'm glad you're here. I often think along these terms, too. Well, what about salvation? All you Christian people, haven't you planned ahead? Haven't you planned that you're going to all pie in the sky and, you know, golden streets and big old mansions and playing harps? Isn't that your plan, you Christians? How would you answer someone like that? It's like this. That's not our plan. Salvation is not our plan. That's his plan. And he has the ability to plan it and carry it out. And you and I do not. So we can put trust in his plan as a guarantee, but not our plans. Make sense? All right. So, what does this have to do with finding peace in the clock? Well, that was all just background, okay? Keep all that in mind. Those are some future principles that the Bible gives us. But then Jesus goes and he gives us what looks like an impossible command. And he says this. So don't worry about tomorrow. Stop. Don't look. That's impossible, don't you think? So don't worry about tomorrow. We already admitted we're like a bunch of digital clocks. We're just fast-forwarding all the time, right? Don't worry about tomorrow, he says. For tomorrow will bring its own worries. Today's trouble is enough for today. It is. Oh, my. He said, stop imagining terrible events in the future. And that's what anxiety is, fear projected to the future. Don't time travel. Focus on today. The thing is, the more firmly we grip our plan, the more anxious we become. I'll say that again. The more firmly we grip our plan, the more anxious we become. When we move from in our plans from what might be to what must be, we become very anxious because we cannot make things become reality. We do not have that control. See, anxiety is a habit that we've developed. We have fast-forwarded in our minds so many times, we've gotten to be professionals at it sometimes. And we don't start with the next minute. We can just, boom, right ahead to tomorrow and next week and next month, and we become more and more anxious as we think about the future. Jesus says, you have enough problems today. You have enough problems with your health. Do you not? I'm almost 47 years old. I got problems with my health I never thought were possible. Some of you are slightly older. You got enough problems with your friends. You got enough problems in your marriage, enough problems with money and your faith and your job. You have enough problems without fast-forwarding, without going back to the future over and over. Don't worry about tomorrow. As I said last week, that's kind of hysterical. It's like telling the hysterical person to calm down. How effective is that? But Jesus can say, don't worry about tomorrow, because he already gave a practical exercise earlier in this chapter. And if you read, and by the way, this teaching... Do we have rats chewing at the cords or something? I seem to be entirely intact. Do you want me to use a different mic? Or are we good? I have no idea where we were now. Right. Start again. No. Don't beat him up on the way out today. It's not very Christ-like. Okay. So I'm just going to continue on, and hopefully they can figure it out. It doesn't seem to be me. Jesus gave this very practical exercise earlier in the same chapter. By the way, when Jesus talked about this, it's from his most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. If you get a chance to read his most famous sermon, you owe it to yourself to read it. It is life-changing. It is difficult. Difficult. I'm going to turn this off. All right. So, in that most famous sermon is where we find the Lord's Prayer.
In the Lord's Prayer, Jesus gives us an outline for prayer that is a little curious. Because he gives us, and you might have had to memorize this as a kid, you know, you might be familiar with this, you may have never heard this before, but in that prayer, he tells his disciples to pray, "Give us today the food we need." Some of you might know it in these terms, "Give us today our daily bread." In other words, give us today what we need today. Give us today what we need today. And I think the food that he's talking about, quite frankly, is more than physical food, but that's a whole nother sermon. I'll leave that for another time. The point is that we are to focus on today's needs, not tomorrow's needs. Now, someone must have corrected Jesus, I got to think, at that point. Because someone who really likes efficiency would say, "Why would you pray for your daily bread? Why don't you just go to God and say, 'God, give me all the bread I'll ever need for the rest of my life.'" Done. On an efficiency scale, that's a 10 out of 10, right? I mean, you just took care of that whole thing. For the rest of your life, you're good. Why did Jesus say, "Give us today the food we need"? Yeah, there it is. Sorry, I got thrown off there a little bit. But before we get to that very important question, I'm going to get to the practical application for what Jesus already told us, which is this. What can we do? First of all, ask for today. Ask for your needs today. Ask for your daily bread, whatever your daily bread may be. Now, for me, one of the things I have found helpful is to go to my schedule for the day and ask God for the bread, whatever that may be, for those events for the day. I don't worry about tomorrow's events, just today's events, focusing on today. You might find that helpful if you're a morning prayer kind of person. Think about the things that you are going to do today. What do you need to do those things for today? But also keep in mind, when Jesus taught that prayer, it was collective. Give us today the food we need, right? By the way, the whole Lord's Prayer, it's all collective. There's no I or me in it. If you look through it, it's wonderful. It's all collective. It's the way Christianity is meant to be. It's a collective thing. So pray for your church family. Pray for other believers, what they need today, especially if you know they have very specific circumstances. Don't go back to the future. Focusing on today's needs is calming. It's not as overwhelming. Next, give thanks for today. Give thanks for today. This is, by the way, just a great mental health exercise. If it was nothing else, if you don't believe in God, you don't believe in Christianity, you're just here checking out, this is just a good thing to do for your own mental health. But as Christians, we have a person that we thank for what we have today. Take a good account of what you have today. All the things that you have that other people don't, you can spend a lot of time doing this. And guess what? I'd recommend that you do. And here's the reason why. It's very calming. When you look at what you have today, it gives you great confidence that God will meet your needs tomorrow. But if you don't take the time to take a good, accurate inventory of what you have today, you will be less inclined to believe God's going to meet your needs tomorrow. Ask for today, give thanks for today. Don't go back to the future. And number three, trust for today. I don't know about you, but my feelings can jump faster than trending topics on Twitter. Anyone else do that? You never know what you're going to get even when you wake up. Am I going to be grumpy today? Am I going to, you know? You're all being very polite. It's very good. And so, trusting God for today is very stabilizing. When you realize, as a follower of Jesus, you cannot lose, and God can be trusted. Watch this. In the book of Isaiah, right? Isaiah, yep. We read this. You will keep in perfect peace all who trust in you, all whose thoughts are fixed on you. Pay careful attention to the tense of the verbs here. You will keep in perfect peace all who trust right now. Not will trust or have trusted, trust right now. You will keep in perfect peace all who trust in you, all whose thoughts are right now fixed on you. If you trust in God today, your thoughts are on God today, you can experience perfect peace. Our problem is we too often fast forward the clock. We go back to the future. We keep going back to the future, back to the future. We get more and more anxious. Our fear projected forward indicates that we have placed way too much trust in ourselves and our ability to control our future. The thing is, we find, and this is very comforting to me, God tends to give us what we need for today, not tomorrow. We can drive ourselves crazy with hypothetical situations about, well, will I have enough faith if this happens? What if that happens? What if that happens? God gives grace for today, what we need today. Tomorrow has enough worries, Jesus says. Don't worry about it. So Jesus already taught us how to pray, focusing on today, today's worries. And Jesus didn't say you'd be worry-free. He said it's got enough, or problem-free. He said it has enough problems of its own. Does your life have enough problems today? If it does, then don't bank up more by going back to the future. Now, to the big question that I asked earlier. Why did Jesus teach us to pray only for our daily bread? And I found no other way to teach this other than talking about Aunt Money Bags. Let's say you have an Aunt Money Bags. She is incredibly wealthy. She bought stocks in Microsoft in 1979. She bought stocks in Google in 1995. She bought stocks in Disney in 2009. We're talking she is loaded. Massive amounts. And she has decided that you are to inherit it all. Thanks, Auntie. Isn't that great? And she gave you two choices. The first choice is she will give you the entire amount, one big check. You could even get one of those great big novelty check things, you know, take it to the bank. Wouldn't that be fun, eh? She said, I'll give you the whole amount, one big check. That's option number one. Option number two is you need to call me every day for the amount for that day. In the end, it's going to be the same amount. I realize this isn't a perfect illustration. Don't know how long you're going to live. But in the end, it'll all be the same amount. You'll get all the same amount. And what's the difference between those two options? Relationship. Relationship is the difference. Why did Jesus not tell his disciples to just say, give me all the bread I'll ever need? Because he wants us to come back to him every day. Come back to him. Build that relationship. Remember, God's big plan, his whole purpose is relationship. So you know him and he knows you. All of him for all of you. That's intimacy. That's what he wants. That's why he taught us to pray, give us today our daily bread. And he wants us to go back tomorrow and say, give us today our daily bread. And every day he wants us to come back to him. Sure, he could give us everything we need and walk away. And he's just a one big sugar daddy. But that's not what he wants. He wants intimacy. He wants relationship with you. Two-way ownership. Don't go back to the future. But isn't this what we do? Think about it. In your most anxious moments, isn't your mind usually in the future? And Jesus said, pull that back. Remember, this is a habit that you and I have developed. It's not going to cure itself overnight. But it's something that we can start to be aware of. Where is our mind traveling to? Am I going back to the future? Am I thinking about tomorrow and next week and next year and all the possibilities of all the things that could happen? It's a good way to become anxious. Jesus said, focus on today. Today. Pray about today. Think about today. Stay focused on the current time. Don't let your clock in your mind skip forward. Stay present. And he tells us, here's the things we can do. Ask for today, give thanks for today, and trust for today. Be keenly aware of the drift in your thinking from today to tomorrow, our inability to control our future, and our insistent plans are feeding our anxiety. Our inability to control our future and our insistent plans are fueling our anxiety. This is why Jesus said, so don't worry about tomorrow. Don't worry about the future. Tomorrow, the future, will bring its own worries. Today's trouble, which we all have, is enough for today. Don't go back to the future. Let's pray.